Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, we'd like to welcome everyone here today to Nuvarsan. We're going to read from Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 10, text number 12 and 13, some verses spoken by Arjuna in glorification of Krishna. So please repeat.
Arjuna Uvacha,
Arjuna Uvacha,
Param Brahma Param Dharma,
Param Brahma Param Dharma,
Pavitram Paramam Bhavan,
Pavitram Paramam Bhavan,
Purusham Shashvatam Divyam,
Purusham Shashvatam Divyam,
Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum,
Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum,
Ahustvam Rishayas Sarve,
Ahustvam Rishayas Sarve,
Devashir Naradas Tatha,
Devashir Naradas Tatha,
Asito Deva Lovyasa,
Asito Deva Lovyasa,
Svayam Chaiva Bravishime,
Svayam Chaiva Bravishime,
Arjuna Uvacha,
Arjuna Uvacha,
Param Brahma Param Dhamma,
Param Brahma Param Dhamma,
Pavitram Paramam Bhavan,
Pavitram Paramam Bhavan,
Purusham Shashvatam Divyam,
Purusham Shashvatam Divyam,
Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum,
Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum,
Ahustvam Rishayas Sarve,
Ahustvam Rishayas Sarve,
Devashir Naradas Tatha,
Devashir Naradas Tatha,
Asito Devalo Vyasa,
Asito Devalo Vyasa,
Svayam Chaiva Bravishime,
Svayam Chaiva Bravishime.
Anyone know the verse? Even the first one? Param Dhamma, Param Dhamma?
Arjuna Vacha,
Arjuna Vacha,
Param Brahma Param Dhamma,
Param Dhamma Param Dhamma,
Param Pavitram Paramam Bhavan,
Pavitram Paramam Bhavan,
Purusham Shashvatam Divyam,
Purusham Shashvatam Divyam,
Adi Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum,
Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum,
Ahustvam
Rishayas Sarve,
Devarshi Naradas Tatha,
Devarshi Naradas Tatha,
Asito Devalo Vyasa,
Asito Devalo Vyasa,
Swayam Cheva Bravishime,
Swayam Cheva Bravishime.
Hare Krishna. Next, please, Mariji. That's a different verse. Okay, turn it. Mata sarvam pravartate. All right, Arjuna Vacha, please.
Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavam Purusham Shashvatam Devyam Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum Ahustvam Rishayas Sarve Devarshir Naradas Tatha Asito Devalo Vyasa Svayam Chaiva Bravishime.
Anyone else? Yes.
Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan Purusham Shashvatam Devyam Adi Devam Ajam. ఆత్మానం విభుం అహం స్వామి శయం సహే దేవాశీర్వాదస్తథా ఆశీతో దేవలో వ్యాస స్వయం చైవ ప్రవిశిమే. అర్జున ఉవాచ
పరమ బ్రహ్మ పరమ ధామ
పరమ బ్రహ్మ పరమ ధామ
పవిత్రం పరమం భవాన్
పవిత్రం పరమం భవాన్ పురుషం
పురుషం శాశ్వతం దివ్యం
పురుషం శాశ్వతం దివ్యం
ఆదిదేవం అజం విభో
ఆదిదేవం అజం విభో
అహుస్వం సర్వే ఋషయ సర్వే
అహుస్వం ఋషయ సర్వే దేవశీర్నారదస్తథా
అసితో దేవలో వ్యాస
అసితో దేవలో వ్యాస
స్వయం చైవ ప్రవేశిమే
స్వయం చైవ ప్రవేశిమే.
అర్జున ఉవాచ
అర్జున ఉవాచ
అర్జున సెడ్
అర్జున సెడ్
పరం సుప్రీం
బ్రహ్మా
ట్రూత్ పరం సుప్రీం
ధామ
సస్టెనెన్స్ పవిత్రం ప్యూర్ పరమం సుప్రీం భావాన్ యు పురుషం పర్సనాలిటీ శాశ్వతం ఒరిజినల్ దివ్యం ట్రాన్సెండెంటల్ అదిదేవం
ది
ఒరిజినల్ లార్డ్ అజం అన్బోర్న్ విభుం గ్రేటెస్ట్ ఆహు సే ద్వాం అవ్ యు
ఋషయా
సేజెస్
సర్వే
ఆల్ దేవరిషి
ది
సేజ్ అమంగ్ ద డెమి గాడ్స్
నారద
నారద తథా ఆల్సో అసిత అసిత దేవల దేవల వ్యాస వ్యాస స్వయం పర్సనలీ ఆల్సో ఏవ సర్టన్లీ ప్రవిశి. You are explaining.
May
unto me. Translation. Arjuna said, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. All the great sages such as Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyasa confirm this truth about you. And now you yourself are declaring it to me. Please repeat. Arjuna said,
Arjuna said,
you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The ultimate abode.
The ultimate abode.
The purest.
The absolute truth.
You are the eternal.
You are the eternal.
Transcendental original person.
Transcendental original person.
The unborn, the greatest. All the great sages,
all the great sages,
such as Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyasa,
such as Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyasa,
confirm this truth about you.
Confirm this truth about you.
And now you yourself are declaring it for me.
Now you yourself are declaring it for me.
Purport. In these two verses, the Supreme Lord gives a chance to the modern philosopher, for here it is clear that the Supreme is different from the individual soul. Arjuna, after hearing the essential four verses of the Bhagavad Gita in this chapter, became completely free from all doubts and accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He at once boldly declares, you are the Param Brahma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Previously, Krishna stated that he is the originator of everything and everyone. Every demigod and every human being is dependent on him. Men and demigods, out of ignorance, think that they are absolute and independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That ignorance is removed perfectly by the discharge of devotional service. This has already been explained in the previous verse by the Lord. Now, by His grace, Arjuna is accepting him as the supreme truth in concordance with the Vedic injunction. It is not that because Krishna is Arjuna's intimate friend that Arjuna is flattering him by calling him the supreme personality of Godhead, the absolute truth. Whatever Arjuna says in these two verses is confirmed by Vedic truth. Vedic injunctions affirm that only one who takes to devotional service to the Supreme Lord can understand him, whereas others cannot. Each and every word of this verse spoken by Arjuna is confirmed by Vedic injunction. Constant thinking of Krishna is smaranam, one of the methods of devotional service. It is only by devotional service to Krishna that one can understand his position and get rid of his material body. In the Vedas, the Supreme Lord is accepted as the purest of the pure. One who understands that Krishna is the purest of the pure can become purified from all sinful activities. One cannot be disinfected from sinful activities unless he surrenders unto the Supreme Lord. Arjuna's acceptance of Krishna as the Supreme Pure complies with the injunction of Vedic literature. This is also confirmed by great personalities, of whom Narada is the chief. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and one should always meditate upon him and enjoy one's transcendental relationship with him. He is the Supreme Existence. He is free from bodily needs, birth, and death. Not only does Arjuna confirm this, but all the Vedic literatures, the Puranas and the histories, and all Vedic literatures, Krishna is thus described, and the Supreme Lord himself also says in the fourth chapter, although I am unborn, I appear on this earth to establish religious principles. He is the supreme origin, he has no cause, for he is the cause of all causes, and everything is emanating from him. This perfect knowledge can be had by the grace of the Supreme Lord. Here Arjuna expresses himself through the grace of Krishna. If we want to understand the Bhagavad Gita, we should accept the statement in these two verses. This is called the Parampara system, acceptance of the disciplined succession. Unless one is in the disciplined succession, he cannot understand Bhagavad Gita. It is not possible by so-called academic education. Unfortunately, those proud of their academic education, despite so much evidence in Vedic literature, stick to their obstinate conviction that Krishna is an ordinary person. Again, the verse Arjuna Uvacha, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam, Bhavan, Purusham, Shashvatam, Divyam, Adi Devam, Ajam, Nibam, Bhutam, Rishayas, Sarve, Devarshir Naradas Tatha Asito Devalo Vyasa Svayam Chaiva Bhravishime. Arjuna said, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. All the great sages such as Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyasa confirm this truth about you, and now you yourself are declaring it to me. So as Srila Prabhupada mentions here in the purport, Arjuna is speaking these verses in response to the four seed verses of the Bhagavad Gita, or the four principal verses of the Bhagavad Gita. Begin with the verse, Aham Sarvasya Bhavabhoma Tathagam Sarvabhoma. Krishna says that he is the source of everything, material and spiritual, practically emanates from him. The wise who knows it perfectly, engage in his devotional service and worship him with all their heart. So by his response here, we can see that Arjuna is fully convinced of this fact, he's fully understood his position in relationship to Krishna. Of course, Arjuna was such a dear devotee of the Lord that the Lord behaved with him in a very intimate way. And the Bhagavad Gita also, especially after seeing the universal form, then Arjuna is expressing to the Lord that he feels a little bit embarrassed, ashamed, that he had behaved with Krishna so intimately, so familiarly, sitting with him, eating with him, joking, even resting in the same bed sometimes. So they had very familiar dealings as friends, but their positions are quite different, and that's revealed in different parts of the Bhagavad Gita. For example, when Arjuna was bewildered in the beginning on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, then he appealed to Krishna, that please instruct me, I'm bewildered, I'm a soul surrendered to you, please instruct me. So that's how Bhagavad Gita came to be spoken, at the prompting of Arjuna, and for his upliftment and purification. And in one verse in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that I know everything that has happened in the past, in the present, in the future, but me no one knows. And he said, many, many births both you and I have had, I can remember all of them, but you cannot. So there's a big difference. Arjuna, at least in this situation, is playing the role of an ordinary person who's bewildered by various conditions and situations in the material world. Therefore, he cannot remember what happened in the past, previous births. But Krishna, he is not in any way covered or deluded by the external energy. Of course, we shouldn't take it that Arjuna is an ordinary person. He is put into that position by the arrangement of Krishna so that Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. But actually, Arjuna is a Nitya Siddha devotee. He's an eternally liberated devotee. But that still doesn't make such a devotee equal to Krishna in every sense of the word. Sometimes it's said that pure devotees are equal to the Lord in the sense that they're fully situated on the spiritual platform. They're fully absorbed in devotional service of the Lord. Therefore, there's no trace of material consciousness in them. So in that sense, they're equal to the Lord. But in another sense, that no one can ever be equal to Krishna. I know everything Krishna said, but me no one knows. So no one can fully know Krishna. Even those who are very elevated, very advanced, very realized, there's something about Krishna that it's always greater and more new, you can say, more fresh, because Krishna is ever fresh. And his pastimes are always expanding in their beauty and intensity and variety. So they're always, Krishna has always got some feature which is beyond even the grasp of the greatest personalities and the greatest devotees. That's why he's Krishna, he's the supreme personality of God. He's always, as it were, he's always number one. Everyone else is subordinate to him. When Kondraka was trying to fight with Krishna, then one of the words he used to describe Krishna was Purushadham. So Sanskrit words, they can, you know, they have varieties of meanings, especially when they're placed together in different ways. So Pundraka meant that Krishna is the lowest person. Purusha means person, and Adham means very low or fallen. But it can also be taken in another way, that he is that personality who makes all others go downwards, in the sense that everyone else is below him, you know. No one can excel him, no one is superior to him. He is actually, another word for Krishna is Purushottam. So Uttam means the topmost person, so Purushottam is the topmost personality. That's who he is. And because he's the topmost personality, therefore everyone else is beneath him. He makes everyone else go downwards. So that's one way of looking at it, of course. But also we can say that by Krishna's association, he lifts everyone up and he makes everyone go upwards through the spiritual world. It's not that Krishna is driving everyone down into material consciousness. No. People go into material consciousness because of their own desires for enjoyment separately from Krishna. They have the little, they're in a little bubble of illusion here in this material world. And Krishna depicts their consciousness in, also in Bhagavad Gita, Ishwara Ham Aham Bhogi Siddham Balavan Sukhi. This is a materialistic or demoniac mentality. Ishwara Ham, I am the supreme personality, the supreme controller, Aham Bhogi, and I am the enjoyer. Siddham, I am perfect. Balavan, I am strong. Sukhi, I am happy. A materialist is always, as it were, chanting this mantra to himself, convincing himself that, you know, he's really the center of attention, he's the best personality, and he's got his own little world and his own little lila. And everyone is running around like that in the material world, isn't it? You know, running around, and inside their head they're thinking so much about themselves and so much about their plans and how they're going to, you know, make their life happy and enjoyable. And the whole meditation is like that. But actually it's a very impure meditation, because it's all connected with this material body, and this material body is very impure. It's just a bag of bones and flesh and blood, stool, urine, mucus, bile. You know that story, was it? When was that in Brisbane? 2 weeks ago? So the devotees, they put on that skit, Liquid Beauty. It's a story Prabhupada tells of one prince, and he went to, you know, he saw one beautiful young lady, and he was very attracted by her external beauty, and he was begging, you know, to marry this young girl. But she was an enlightened person. You can say she was a sadhu. And she understood that she wasn't the body, so she thought to educate him, give him an education in self-realization, to get him off the bodily platform. So she told him, all right, you come back in 1 week, then I'll accept your hand if you like. So then she began taking strong purgatives, and she was vomiting and passing stool and urine, and she collected all these foul substances in some jars. So by the end of the week, she looked very haggard and ugly, shriveled up. So he came again, and he knocked on the door, and then she opened the door, and he was a bit shocked, and he said, who are you? Where is that beautiful young damsel that I met last week? Please, you know, I'm so anxious to meet her. And she said, well, if you like, I can show her to you. Please come inside. And then she showed the jars of all these foul substances, and here she is. So then he understood what had happened, and he had some realization. And in this way he became disgusted with his material desires. Another demonstration of that is actually the story of Dhruva Maharaj, in a different way. But Dhruva Maharaj, as a young boy, he was rejected by his father because his father had two wives, Suniti, who was the mother of Dhruva, and Suruchi, who was the mother of Uttanapada. So, Dhruva Maharaj, having Kshatriya blood, see, he wanted to climb on the lap of his mother, of his father, but his father pushed him off and took Uttanapada on his lap. So, he was crying, and Suruchi told him that, you know, you should understand that there's no chance of you being able to sit on the lap of your father or inherit the kingdom until you have taken birth in my womb. You might as well go and worship the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and pray to him. And maybe in the next life you can be born in my womb, and then you can, you know, become the king's son, or you can inherit the kingdom. So he went to his mother. He was very distressed, and his mother said, "What can I do? You know, I'm not favored by your father. And actually, the advice given by your stepmother is very good advice. You better worship the Lord." So he said, "Where can I find the Lord? How can I meet him?" So she said, "I heard some great sages in the forest, sometimes in their meditation, they seem to see the Lord." Immediately wanted to go to the forest. So Narad said, "No, no, no." And Narad Muni came. He said, "No, no, this is not suitable for a young boy like you. Stay at home with your mother." But he was insistent. But then Narad, he admired that Kshatriya blood, that Kshatriya quality, and he gave him some instructions. He said, "You can go to the forest, you fashion a deity made of some natural elements, you worship the Lord in that way, and you can chant the mantra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya." So then he went to the forest, just a young boy. He was worshipping the Lord, he was chanting the mantra, and he reduced his eating just to berries that he found in the forest. Then he stopped eating, he was just drinking water. Then even he stopped that, he was just, you know, breathing. And then he reduced his breathing right down, something like once a month he was taking a breath or so. Tremendous austerities. And it said that when he pushed his foot down, his toe down on the earth, then it dented the earth, and it also had some repercussions in the heavenly planets. The demigods were shaking in their abodes. So they appealed to the Lord, "Please do something." So the Lord came down personally. He said, "Don't worry, I'll take care of this." He came down personally, and he met Dhruva Maharaj and touched him with his conch shell. And when he touched him with his conch shell, Dhruva became infused with transcendental ecstasy. And then the Lord said to him, "That what benediction would you like?" And Dhruva, at that point, he thought, "That only benediction I want is to be engaged in your service." And in this way, you know, he was feeling completely satisfied at heart. But the Lord said, "Anyway, you know, you take the kingdom. You can have a king. You can have a whole planet." So in this way, he gave Dhruva spiritual blessing, but he also fulfilled the particular material desires that he wanted. But after that, Dhruva was actually feeling somewhat ashamed within himself. He wasn't happy because he thought that, you know, I was worshipping the Lord with so many material desires. This is like looking for broken glass, but I've found the greatest jewel. So he could understand very clearly then that this kind of hankering for material enjoyment, material sense gratification, is very impure due to conditioned life. Well, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "Mamaivam sajiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manasa stan indriyani prakriti stani karshati," that the living entities are my eternal fragmental parts, but due to conditioned life they're struggling very hard with the six senses, which includes the mind. So we are struggling with the material body, you know, and the senses are pushing us in different ways. There are six kinds of pushings from the speech, the mind, anger, tongue, stomach, and genitals. And living entity is constantly being driven by these different forces to engage in different kinds of impure activities, which contaminate his consciousness and make him experience actually very bitter taste in this material world. Prabhupada gives an example from one of the Upanishads of Svatasvata Upanishad with two birds in a tree. And one of those birds is always trying to enjoy the fruits of the tree, and some of the fruits are sweet, but some of the fruits are very bitter. And the other bird is just witnessing. And after trying to enjoy one tree, he moves to another tree, and then another tree. And the other bird accompanies him. But he never feels satisfied eating the fruits. But one day he turns to his friend, the witnessing bird, and he begins to develop some relationship with him. And this way feels satisfied. So this story illustrates how living entity is taking birth in different species of life, and he's trying to enjoy the material senses and the material mind, but he never becomes satisfied by that activity. But when he turns to the Lord, who is the super soul in the heart, when he turns to Krishna and begins to develop some relationship with Krishna, then he feels satisfied at heart. So this is the message of Bhagavad Gita, this is the message of all the Vedic scriptures, that we should stop misidentifying with this bag of bones and blood and urine and stool. You know, that we may decorate this body very nicely on the outside. You know, we can comb our hair nicely and put on nice clothing and some aftershave lotion or, you know, whatever. And, you know, we can move around, you know, as if we're a very, you know, respectable person. But if we just cut open that body, you know, take a knife and cut it open, then all kinds of horrible things will come out, didn't it? So it's covered in blood, and you might see the bones inside. But it's not very attractive, is it? Nobody likes to think about that. In fact, you know, many people can't stand the sight of blood. You know, if they see something like that happen, they just, you know, might freak out. So we don't like to see that, but that's the, you know, that's the reality. That's what's inside this body. So we should spend our whole life just working for this body, because we'll be disappointed in the end. This body will just dwindle, it will just shrivel up. Sometimes we don't like to see old people either, isn't it? Very, very old people, the body is shriveled up, isn't it? I remember we were walking on the beach with Prabhupada in Puri, and, you know, he had his cane and he was, you know, walking with some difficulty. And he said, I remember as a young man, just married, and I was dressed in khadi cloth, you know, candy. He was encouraging everyone to wear khadi cloth. He said, I came here with my family to Puri, and I was running on the beach, you know, like a young boy. But now you see the position. Can hardly walk. And he said, do not think that it won't happen to you. So this is destined, the same thing is destined to happen to everyone's body. But the beauty of being a devotee is that he realizes, I'm not the body. That's not me. Just like a coconut, you know, it's daubed, it's very green and fresh, you know, then it's all like one piece. But when the coconut dries up, and it shrivels up, then the inner part of the coconut, that white portion, it becomes detached from the shell. Sometimes you can rattle it. So the soul is living inside the body, but a devotee, he's in that kind of consciousness where he realizes that he's separate from the body. It's like that inner part of the coconut is separate from the coconut shell. So he's in the body, but he's separate from the body. So sometimes this realization only kind of comes on in old age. That's why in old age people may become more religious, because they realize there's not that much time left and I'm going to have to quit this body. That reality becomes stronger and stronger the older a person gets. When one is young, then, you know, he tends to be completely absorbed in trying to enjoy the senses. But Prahlad Maharaj, he advised, Komaram acharad pragya dharmam bhagavatamiha durlabha manasam janma tadapya dhruva martadam, that one who has got sufficient intelligence, he should, from the very beginning of life, that is from the tender age of childhood, he should engage himself in devotional service. Although this human body is temporary like other bodies, it's very special because one can engage in the devotional service of the Lord. Even a slight amount of devotional service can give one complete perfection. So generally animals, they have no chance to understand the spiritual position or to engage in devotional service unless they get some very special mercy from some devotee, you know, who can somehow give them prasadam or engage them in some kind of activity connected with Krishna. So just like say devotees may engage bullocks, and Mr. Bullocks were there exactly after, but there are so many bullocks in this country and they're not engaged in any kind of devotional service. But these bullocks, they were pulling their cart, and devotees, children were riding on the cart, and it was in front of Rathiatra, so they were doing wonderful service there, right up front there in the Rathiatra. Or even devotees might engage some dog as a guard dog, say in Govardhan, there was a Hari Rama dog. I don't know if he was a guard dog or what he was, but he was a devotee dog, and he used to, you know, sit outside a temple during kirtans and classes. You could see through the glass walls. The walls there are glass, so you could see the deities, and he liked to come and take some prasadam. We were in a city in Siberia also last summer, Novokuznetsk. Horrible place. Really hellish place. When you go there on the train, it's like, you know, about 100 miles of coal mines. You come into it, and then the city itself is about some kind of nuclear reactor. The whole atmosphere is just, you know, you can practically see the dirt in the atmosphere. Very hard to breathe. Anyhow, we haven't got the after there. Devotees were dancing around in a circle, and some dog, he kept coming in, you know, tangling up with devotees' feet, and, you know, going for the devotees' feet like that. Not to bite them, but like just kind of touch them with his hand. And he was dancing around in a circle, and it went on the whole Rathiatra. And then, you know, we went back to the temple afterwards, which was an apartment, like some distance away. We drove there. And, you know, we were just going, came up in the elevator, and we were just going into the apartment where the temple was, and suddenly this dog shot out, and he came inside as well. I said, how did he come here? And they said, he's a devotee. Actually, you know, our temple was previously on the other side of town, and when we moved, we actually left him there. And then a couple of days later, he showed up here on his own, found his own way here. So the devotee, somehow he got the mercy of it. There's also cockatoo in Christchurch who can chant Hare Krishna. So these are rare kind of situations where animals, they somehow or other get the chance for purification. But human beings, they have much, much more opportunity. So much opportunity. Now the Sankirtan movement is going on in full swing all over the world. I think Hare Krishna is a household word now, after only, you know, 25 years of preaching around the world. Here in New Zealand, it's, everybody practically knows Hare Krishna. So that means in human form of life, there's so much opportunity. Devotees are distributing so many books, they're doing Harinam, the television programs. In Australia, within the last month, there have been, what, 3-4 very favorable programs about the devotees. Long, one of them was an hour-long program. So many things about Srila Prabhupada in that program. They called him one of the greatest religious leaders of the century. There were, you know, long portions from the film, Your Ever Well Wisher, straight from the film. So it showed also Prabhupada departing from the planet. So many things were there. So people are getting the chance to hear about Prabhupada, to hear about Krishna consciousness, to hear the message of Bhagavad Gita. So it's so fortunate to take birth on this earthly planet at this time. It's said in Bhagavatam that the demigods pray to take birth in Kali Yuga on the earthly planet while the Sankirtan movement is going on, just so that they can participate. Because in one short life, one can attain perfection and go back to Godhead. So what is the perfection? The perfection is to be able to think of Krishna, to be absorbed in devotional service to Krishna. Because even though we have this impure material body, you know, which is so gross and which has, you know, so many bad tendencies which could entangle us for millions of lifetimes, because animal is not responsible for his activities. If he does something wrong, he doesn't get more sinful reactions. Otherwise, he could never become elevated. He's working off his sinful reactions, and he'll come up through different species, and he'll come back again to the human form of life. But a human being is responsible for his activities, because in human society, every kind of human society, there are some kind of moral codes and religious values, and one should follow them, and if he follows them, he'll become elevated. And to have the chance to take to Krishna consciousness is the best of all opportunities in the different human forms of life. This is the topmost. But if one misuses that opportunity and performs sinful activities knowingly, then again he goes down again. He can even become born as an animal. And very, very long time to come back again to human form of life and get the opportunity to engage in devotional service. Of course, if one is a very elevated devotee and he makes some slight mistake, there are cases, I think Maharaj was referring this morning, but like Bharat Maharaj, for example, he got birth as an animal, but in one short lifetime, he was able to return again to a position of a devotee because he remembered the Lord, even in animal form. But not we should not think that we can just deviate somehow from Krishna conscious activities, engage in materialistic activities, and expect that there won't be some kind of reaction for that. Actually, will be reaction for that. So therefore, one should be very vigilant and not